For all of those of you who have been anxiously waiting for the results of our holiday cookie swap with Ruth Reichel, well, your time has finally come. We received over 60 recipes, much more than we expected, so Ruth had a very hard time over the weekend picking out the ones that she liked best, and in a little while, the winners will be discussing their recipes with us and telling us why they're so special to them. Joining me now, as she does regularly on the show, is Ruth Reichel, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine. It's always a pleasure to see you, Ruth.
Well, this was so much fun looking at all these recipes. And, you know, they keep coming in. And I hope everybody will go onto the website and look at all of the recipes because they all look wonderful.
I was surprised by how good they all looked. I would have thought this would have really been a difficult decision. And I know we've done this in the past, and people have said, gee, I didn't expect so many submissions. If we had this essay contest and hundreds came in, my brother had to read hundreds of essays. 60-plus cookie recipes. You're knowledgeable enough so that you can read the recipe and immediately imagine the cookie in your head? Is this like Beethoven with writing music?
I can imagine them. I can taste them.
I can.
And I sort of chose them. It was so difficult that I ended up thinking, okay, let's just imagine that we're going to bake all of these and you want a real variety. Although I realize now I seem to have gone for a lot of nuts and jam. And then I went for one that just, I love lemon, so I couldn't resist the lemon one. And then there was one that was just seemed so unusual to me because it's like a shortbread with green tea, which is something I'd never seen before. So that really struck me.
Well, don't give away too much.
I won't.
We'll be speaking to
the
winner.
And then there's one that seems really easy and amazing. So this was really, really fun.
Now, Gourmet has published some really interesting cookie recipes in the December issue. And this year you have mint lollipops, pistachio toroni, passion fruit gelées. It goes way beyond those nice crisp cookies from Grandma.
Well, this year we decided to do candies as well as cookies. And to sort of do things like the cookies we did are very wonderful versions of commercial cookies. So something that takes off on an Oreo and makes much more extravagant.
And better chocolate
and a better filling and incredibly wonderful. And then these wonderful little mint patties. If you like chocolate-covered mints, these are superb.
When do you start testing these things? Is this something you do in the summer, or do you do it Christmas for next Christmas?
We're doing next Christmas now. And we have a cookie expert. And, about now we start saying, okay, what are we going to be eating next year?
Are candies more complicated than cookies?
Candies are much more complicated. I mean, candies, you need things like thermometers. They're not forgiving. It's really about chemistry.
And that's like baking to some degree, but even baking is a bit more forgiving.
I mean, baking is pretty forgiving. I mean, even if you get it wrong, they're pretty good usually.
Well, what about people who say, you know, I cut all sugar in half when I bake my cookies or a cake? Are they screwing things up because baking is semi-scientific?
They are. You can't. I mean, cutting sugar in half, you're really courting disaster. It might work, but the chemistry, you know, it's like you can't double every recipe either. I mean, sometimes it just doesn't work. I mean, you are talking about delicate chemistry here.
I've doubled and halved recipes for years and wondered why it didn't work. And now what I do is no matter what the portion I'm doing, if it's, let's say it's something with a sauce, I make the complete sauce because I know that if I don't do that, I make sauce for a dinner party for 12, even though it's two of us, because it just doesn't work out when you cut it by four.
Actually, one of the things that we spend a lot of time at the magazine doing is doing that kind of work for you and trying to figure out, you know, how to make a recipe for eight work for four and making sure that the sauces work and trying to get, and actually this morning we were doing a lemon tart and trying to figure out how much lemon juice you get from the average lemon. So if we said three lemons, how much that really was. And at one point we actually squeezed 100 lemons to sort of average out.
And then, of course, there are so many different kinds of lemons. You don't know whether a Meyer's lemon is going to give you the same juice as that three for a dollar lemon at your
One with the really thick rind.
Right. You've given us a recipe for Hermine's oatmeal cookies. Will you be making them this Christmas?
These are Hermine was my mother's best friend. And she made these are sort of a classic lace cookie, but I always find them completely magical. They're very easy. They taste like they have nuts in them, but they're really just basically oatmeal and butter. And they, you know, go down to this what looks like lace. And I have loved them since I was a little girl.
When you were looking through all of the cookie recipes our listeners submitted, did you see any that you'd never seen before? Is it possible to invent a cookie recipe that has never been done before?
Yes, of course it's possible.
It is.
I had, for instance, I had never seen these matcha shortbread cookies before, which just sound amazing and quite beautiful to me. Although one of the things that sort of stunned me when going through all these cookies is how many of them were variations on the classic Toll House recipe. Mm-hmm. I would say, a quarter of them are basically just variations on that beloved cookie. You know, some people put white chocolate chips and cranberries in place of the ordinary chocolate chips. Somebody said just, here's the recipe my grandson makes that we renamed it for him, but it's just off the back of the bag.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a little bit of chutzpah for submitting that recipe. I mean, who wins finally? Nestle's?
The people who are selling those chocolate chips, they're big winners. And then there was one that starts with a box of cake mix.
Oh,
I did not choose that one.
My guest is Ruth Reichel, who is the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine and has kindly allowed us to inundate her with cookie recipe submissions from our listeners, over 60. And we are going to speak to some of the people who have won. In fact, should we go to one of those, first call?
Absolutely.
Okay, put on the headphones, please, Ruth.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're not going to be able to
headphones
hear.
Headphones on.
Mariana, our first caller is Mariana Bailey from Teaneck, New Jersey. Hi, Mariana.
Hi.
Your daughter, Lynn, sent us the recipe.
Well, actually, Lynn is my daughter, and I'm her mother, and I live in Asheville, North Carolina.
Ah. So is this a Southern kind of recipe?
Well, maybe so, because I grew up in the South, grew up in Mount Airy, North Carolina.
Wait, that's where Andy Griffith had Mayberry fame, wasn't he?
That's right.
Was it anything like what you grew up in, that TV show?
Yes, very small town, and just everybody knew everybody, and it was just a great place to grow up. And one of the things about it is that we had a lot of parties around Christmas time, and we always had with teas, they were called teas, and they'd have little sand dabs. So that's where the recipe came from.
Now, what makes them Southern, or are they Southern?
Well, I don't know if they're Southern or not, but they're small, and they're so you can eat the cookie with one bite.
And I would think that probably what makes them Southern is the pecans. I mean, this is there's a similar Greek version of this cookie that uses walnuts. But, I mean, what you're looking at is a very rich, melt-in-your-mouth nut cookie.
That's right.
And what makes it rich? A lot of butter?
Yes.
A lot of butter
and a lot
of nuts.
I guess that's the secret.
But not much sugar.
Yes, that's true. You just have 4 teaspoons of powdered sugar. That's it?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So these are not very sweet?
Well, you roll them in powdered sugar.
And for me, one of the things that's magical about them is that they're not sweet. And if you'll notice, a lot of the cookies I've chosen are not particularly sweet because I like to taste. I don't like everything masked by intense sweetness. And these, I imagine, to be really textural. I imagine them sort of melting in your mouth.
They do. They just melt.
Do you make all the cookies that you eat, or is there, now that you live in New Jersey, is there a baker who reminds you of the sort of thing you had when you were growing up in Mount Airy?
Well, I still live in North Carolina.
Oh, you do?
In Asheville. Yes, my daughter lives in Teaneck.
So what happens? Do you have to send her care packages?
Yes, I do. I send her the cookies every Christmas. But actually, this is about the only cookie I make.
Well, it sounds like this is a cookie so good you don't need any others.
Have you already made them for this holiday season?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Mariana. And by the way, you can find that recipe and all the recipes that Ruth has chosen on our show page at WNYC.org. Next up is Evelyn Stock. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi.
Now, you don't live in Mount Airy. You live in Westchester,
I live in Scarsdale, a suburban lady who grew up on a farm in Massachusetts.
And your son-in-law posted your lemon square recipe on our site. He says you're an extraordinary baker.
Well, I've been baking for a very, very, very long time, and I have recipes that I use, and I'd like to try new ones, but everybody expects the same things, and they're disappointed when they don't get them, so it's hard to find new things.
And you said you'd been making this one for 30 years.
Actually, I think I've been making it for about 40. I got the recipe from a cookbook that was done by a Baltimore museum, and it said lemon cheese squares, and there was no cheese. And I said, well, I have to see why it says that, and that's how it started. And I've been living in Scarsdale for 37 years, and I've been making them for all kinds of activities, and everyone expects it, to the point where they encouraged me to give a course at the Scarsdale Adult School this past fall, and that had to be one of the cookies.
Now, why was it called lemon cheese when there's no cheese?
I have no idea.
Does it even taste like there's cheese in it?
No. No, not at all.
But it sounds like it might have that this lemon mixture on top might have a slightly cheesy texture.
I don't know. All I know is that everyone who has had them loves them, and they're so, so easy to make that my husband once made them. And although I said they were foolproof, someone confused the sugar with the flour, and it wasn't quite foolproof.
But even it's been my experience that even people who follow the recipe exactly often cannot duplicate what a talented baker can do.
I'm not a talented baker, but I was once very, very insulted because someone asked me if she could watch me make it, and I said, sure. And when I put them in the oven, she said, you really did give me the right recipe.
Wow. Thought that you would try to, you wouldn't share it completely?
Well, what's the point? It was in the Scarsdale League of Women Voters cookbook. It's been everywhere. I give it to everybody because it's easy and it's fun, and everyone who likes lemon loves it.
Well, thank you so much for sharing it with us. And Ruth, you said that one of the things that appealed to you was just that you love lemon so much.
I do love lemon. My first cookbook, which I wrote when I was 21, I had a whole chapter on lemon recipes. And if I had had this recipe, I would have put it in there.
Well, she doesn't say the juice of 2 lemons or something, 4.5 tablespoons of freshly squeezed. So you know, who knows how many lemons that was.
Well, an ordinary lemon is about 4 tablespoons. So this, you might have to cut another lemon in half just to get that extra half tablespoon.
And then zest. And so I would assume the zest is really important for giving it that special zing.
Yes, and I would probably zest more than one lemon to add more. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the more lemon, the better. And most of the flavor comes from the oil and the zest. So I would throw a little bit more in there.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll come back with more of the people whose cookies Ruth Reichel has chosen as part of our holiday cookie recipe swap. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Stay with us. And we're back with Ruth Reichel, who is the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine and a regular contributor to this show. Also can be seen on television. Ruth, you're all over the place.
I try.
And writing and writing another book? Now a novel, are you?
I am. I'm working on a novel. Very slowly.
Really? Oh, because you have all these other things to do.
There's a lot going on at the moment, yes.
And I'm sure we slowed you down when we hit you with those 60-plus recipes from our listeners.
Oh, this was pure pleasure.
Well, should we go to our next caller? Daniel Isengard. Hi, Daniel.
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is an old world recipe.
Definitely.
Spitzbuben?
Spitzbuben, yeah. It means a little rascal. And I would think that it's an old Viennese recipe. It's traditional, but what that also means is that everyone has his own take on it, I would say. But it's really, I would say, the quintessential nut and jam cookie.
Yeah, this is sort of a version of a Linzer cookie.
Yes, although the Linzer cookie is distinguished by the addition of spices, such as cinnamon and clove. And this one really only has the vanilla and the ground almonds. And then you make your choice with the jam that you fill them with. I like to use red currant jam because it has a little bit of acidity. And I always pass it through a sieve to get rid of all the seeds, which I think is very important because it's a small cookie, so texture is crucial. And then you can glaze it with a sugar glaze, or you can add, you know, roll them in powdered sugar.
Well, I particularly like your sugar glaze where you're using Grand Marnier as the liquid in the glaze. Which...
Yeah, that's my ad. I mean, some people would use lemon juice, but I think if you have some acidity in the jam filling, you have an additional layer of flavor by choosing some kind of liquor that you like. You can use rum or Grand Marnier or something like that.
Well, I assume that when it was done in the 19th century, they didn't use a food processor, so things have changed.
Well, actually, even the generation of my parents, they really cracked the nuts and ground the nuts through a hand mill. So, of course, now in Germany, you can buy ground nuts readily available in every supermarket. But I like to do it with a food processor because it's fresh, of course.
And would you be making these if you were still living in Germany?
Oh, I do make them. I made them yesterday. I make them every year. Christmas is not the same without these, and this is just one kind. I mean, the whole tradition of Christmas baking, I grew up with this in Germany, and you need to have a variety for the whole experience. But this is the one I think has the most charm because the name is so cute, and it's just incredibly... It's very sweet, but they're also very small, so for me, it's one of those perfect cookies.
Ruth, have you seen Spitzbuben before?
Well, I have seen things. I have never seen a recipe exactly like this one.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen similar recipes. One of the things I love about this recipe is that Daniel actually grinds the almonds with the inside of the vanilla bean.
Yes. Well, the reason I do that is that when you grind nuts in a food processor, if you're not careful, it turns into a paste. And if you add the sugar in the food processor, it's drier and you end up with a finer texture. But also, it's important when you make your own vanilla sugar. That's another thing of quality here. When you take the vanilla bean, you scrape out the seed, and then usually you just rub that into the sugar, and that's how you get those essential oils really into the sugar. And there is no substitute for that. You cannot use, liquid vanilla essence because that would change the texture of the dough.
I assume that all of your friends who adore these have no idea of just how much trouble you go to.
That's okay. You know, you have to make them with love, and that's also part of the tradition, you know.
And that's one of the things I loved about it. I mean, this is a real labor of love. This is a cookie that...
It is, although through the years you pick up little tools. I mean, I remember as kids we used to laboriously spread the jam with a little knife on each cookie. And now I do it with a little pastry bag, and it goes 10 times faster. So you pick up tools to make it more efficient, time efficient, but you don't cut back on quality of the ingredients.
Thank you so much for talking with
You're
us, Daniel.
Welcome. Thank you.
Our next... contestant, or however, submitter, is Carol, who is also a New Yorker, and she has a never-fail recipe called matcha shortbread. This is the one you were talking about earlier, Ruth, that has green tea powder in it.
Yes.
You said you'd never seen anything like this before.
I have not. And I'm curious to know if Carol invented this herself.
Carol?
Hi. First of all, thanks for having me on. And no, I can't say that I actually invented this recipe, no.
Where did you find it?
It actually, I found it in an old newspaper clipping that my mom had from a Chinese newspaper. And, you know, usually I don't believe anything she says because they come up with these crazy advice columns like, eat grapes soaked in gin, it'll keep you healthy. But,
sounds good to me.
But this is one of the things that I took away from it that actually worked out for me.
Now, it also has sea salt in it. Ruth, do many sweets have salt in them?
Salt is essential in baking. You need the salt to counteract the sugar. And one of the things we sometimes do at Gourmet to show people how ingredients work together is bake a batch of brownies with salt and without salt. And you cannot believe what a half teaspoon of salt will do to flavor. It just wakes everything up.
In this case, we have shortbread, which I suspect people never tire of. It is one of those things that always tastes great. Again, perhaps because of the butter as much as the salt. Do you make this every Christmas?
I do now. You know, I got into this whole thing because I would get, basically when I first graduated from college, I had no money. So I thought, okay, well, I'll bake cookies for people because everybody likes edible presents. And this became one of the ones that every year people will say, did you make any of those green tea things? Did you make any of those green tea things? And they do come out a really nice pale green color. So, you know, it's a nice addition to a box of cookies.
And you also give them a lot of different shapes. Do you have, Ruth, do you have a bunch of cookie cutters in your house?
I do. It's one of those things that, you know, people wrap gifts, you know, putting cookie cutters on them. So over the years, I've collected a number of terrific shapes.
So people send you them just as wrappings, and you wind up using them as real cookie cutters.
I am a pack rat. I keep everything. So,
well, thank you so much for talking with us, Carol.
Thanks for having me.
And next, we're speaking to Anne Allen Ryan from Brooklyn, who posted a recipe for chocolate spice cookies. Hi, Anne. Can you tell us why you sent us this particular recipe?
Well, I've totally forgotten my recipe. I am about to head for the kitchen and make matcha shortbread. That sounds irresistible.
Well, you can find it on our website, showpage at WMYC.org.
Right.
Maybe you want to make both, because yours sounds terrific.
Well, the chocolate spice cookies are in the freezer, where they've been now for a couple of weeks. And I started baking cookies as a child, and in my growing up years in Southern California, Christmas cookies were always rolled sugar cookies and rolled gingerbread cookies. And we made a terrible mess, and it was such a chore, making the frosting and getting it on, et cetera, that as an adult I was delighted to discover that there were other kinds of Christmas cookies, including these wonderful icebox cookies that can be stored. And a couple of years ago, my friend and professional colleague shared this recipe with me, a copy from an ancient gourmet magazine, and it has become part of my repertoire ever since.
Now, Ruth, is there any favoritism at work here?
I have to admit that I couldn't resist it since it was an old gourmet recipe, but it also sounded great. It's got a lot of spices in it.
Is it really spicy, this recipe?
When I make it, it is very spicy because I cannot imagine adding an eighth of a teaspoon.
I'm with you. I'm
completely
with you.
Spice to a recipe. So I'm pretty casual with the amount, including the amount of pepper, which is a lot of fun. It really is a fail-proof cookie and so easy to roll and cut that, in contrast to many cookies, it's a real delight. And it goes into the tins that I distribute all over my neighborhood. Take with me to local parties, take to the local firehouse.
Well, you say you're a compulsive cookie baker at this time
of
year, so you make a lot of different kinds of cookies.
I usually make about 10 different kinds of cookies and try to balance the flavor, the texture, and the color, and keeping in mind certain cookies, like a very soft cookie, is not going to keep well. I have a Danish recipe for cardamom cookies that always falls apart, and that's one of the fatalities from my long list of cookies.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for letting me share with you.
And thank you for this recipe. It sounds great.
And it is from Gourmet Magazine, 1980. Barbara Jones from Chester, New Jersey, joins us now. You submitted a pastry cookie recipe called Kifli. Where does that name come from?
I believe it's a Hungarian cookie. My mother came from England and didn't have any real recipes for cookies. So my aunt, who lived in Island and or down in Perth Amboy, was a very big immigrant community, had this Hungarian kifli recipe.
Well, the British do make some nice cookies, don't they?
Well, they make a lot of puddings and cakes and things like that, but she wasn't a big cook when she first came to America, so she started asking my aunts whether they had any recipes, and this is the one that came up.
Now, Ruth, this sounds very rich with sour cream and nuts and egg yolk and butter.
And it's also, I mean, it's quite unusual, and it's a little fussy. I mean, you make, first you make a dough, and then you make a kind of meringue thing with nuts in it, and then you put that on and fold the dough over it. So this is an interesting recipe that I was very curious to try.
Yeah. Are people ever worried that it might be fattening?
Well, you know, it's not very rich when you taste it. It bakes up like a very light, almost like a puff pastry. The filling puffs up. The dough becomes a very light paste, pie crust kind of dough.
Yeah, this actually did not seem that rich to me. I mean, you've got 3.5 cups of flour to a cup of butter. Well, and a cup of sour cream.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I end up cutting the pastry part in half because it becomes such a labor-intensive thing towards the end that you're making cookies forever. So when I make the recipe, I cut the dough in half, keep the nut mixture the same, and then after you bake them, you can just freeze the cookies. They turn out very well when you've defrosted them. The other thing that you can add, which doesn't make them as delicate, would be something called lekvar, which is a prune butter, which is very rich. My mother makes them with apricot jam.
And then you sort of have hamantash.
Yeah, but you can get lekvar. Thank you for talking with us. You can get lekvar at a number of Hungarian specialty stores. I think it probably even comes in jars these days.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
I remember you used to go up the Upper East Side, and there were a whole bunch of places that would make it fresh. Those were the good old days. Our last submitter is Barbara Kisonis, who is also from New Jersey. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
And I'm fine. Where did you get this recipe?
This was a recipe that one of my husband's aunts made, and I got it the first Christmas. We went over to visit them, and they had these wonderful little cookies, and I asked her for the recipe, and I've been making it ever since.
And it's called kolichkes?
Kolachkes.
Kolachkes. Says Polish.
It sounds Polish, but they're actually Lithuanian.
And they sound so easy. I mean, this is a recipe that just, I mean, I couldn't resist this recipe because it's it's got so few ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds absolutely wonderful and foolproof, and it's not like any recipe I've ever seen before.
Really?
Yeah. It's really so simple. It's easy to put together, and they look great, and they taste great, and my family really loves them.
And you use apricot preserves?
We like apricot or raspberry. Those are our two favorites.
Do you have a favorite brand, or do you make this yourself?
No. Do I have a favorite brand of preserves?
Yeah, sure.
No.
There are some that are... Ruth, what about buying those preserves? Because you can go to any specialty shop and see preserves that range in price from a couple of dollars a jar to $10 a jar. Are they all that much better when they're that much more expensive?
I am sorry to tell you that my husband is addicted to the most expensive preserve out there. It is with the exchange rate these days, it's embarrassing to buy. But if you try and pawn off anything lesser on him, he just turns up his nose at it. And there really is an enormous difference
between the quality of the fruit?
It's the amount of sugar that's used. It's the quality of the fruit. And there's no way to tell until you start tasting your way through them. But, you know, some of the preserves that are more fruit than sugar taste much better.
How many years have you been making this, Barbara?
About 35 years. Mm. Yeah.
Do you get better at it, or is it, you just hope it came out as good, it comes out as good as last year?
It pretty much does. I mean, it's so simple, it's hard to, mess anything up. So it pretty much comes out the same, and I guess that's what everybody likes about it, the predictability.
I mean, this is a recipe that has five ingredients,
mm-hmm.
one of which is bottled preserves.
Uh-huh.
And the simplicity of it is so seductive. I mean, it's butter, cream cheese, flour.
Don't let Roseanne Gold know that you've done this. It'll be in the next cookbook. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Are you going to try any of these for the holiday?
You know what? I'm going to try them all.
Really?
Yes, I am.
Do you try the ones in the magazine?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, of course I do. I mean, people expect me to give them the cookies from the magazine.
Well, you're not expected back on the show until February 5th. I'm going to have you back earlier just to have some of the cookies.
They'll be stale by then. I'll send you some.
Meanwhile, as I said earlier, you can find these recipes on our show page at WNYC.org and also find yours, Hermine's oatmeal cookie.
Yes, they are very, very easy.
Uh-huh.
Unlike these, which you have, almost all of these are things you have to cut out, Hermine's you just
plop
onto the tray and put them in the oven for 8 minutes.
Will you be cooking a whole holiday dinner? Well, first of all, there was Hanukkah. Did you cook specially for Hanukkah?
I was out of town for almost all of Hanukkah. I was in California all last week. But I have 18 people coming for Christmas dinner. So we will have a major Christmas dinner.
And I'll have to find out what you made for Christmas after the fact, I assume. You don't do turkey as you did for Thanksgiving.
No, I did turkey for Thanksgiving. I imagine I'll be doing roast beef for Christmas. Mm-hmm.
Is there a gourmet special roast beef recipe, or is there just a Ruth Reichel special recipe? After all, you were a professional cook for a long time.
Well, you know, one of the things about roast beef is if you buy a good piece of beef, you basically just throw it in the oven. There's, you don't have to do much to it.
Are you a slow cooker type? Do you do it on a slow roast?
No, I, you know, put it in a 350 oven and take, you know, I sear it, you know, put it into a hot oven, turn the oven down.
Ruth Reichel will be back with us on Tuesday, February 5th, and I always look forward to seeing you. Thank you so much for being with us today and for going through all of those recipes.
Well, this was really fun. Thank you. And thanks to all of the many cookie bakers out there.
As baby boomers age and wounded soldiers return from Iraq, Americans increasingly will be caring for ill family members at home. On tomorrow's show, a look at the challenges and rewards of being a caregiver. Also, choreographer Melissa Fenley and composer Philip Glass on their creative collaboration at The Joyce. Then Lorenzo Ghiberti's magnificent bronze panels from Florence, Italy, plus Al and Larry Ubell. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blake Neeschick, Scott Goldberg, and Sarah English. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Angie Sheldon, Rachel Krantz, and contributing producers Virginia Doris and Melissa Waldron Lehner. Debbie Darcy was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.